Blog Talk Radio.
Exploration. Love. Healing. Magic. You've entered a very special place where anything can happen. Stay inside your ride, but be prepared to expand your consciousness. Welcome to the Psychic Funhouse. Good evening to everyone listening out there. Ships at sea, people on the space station, anybody and everywhere. Welcome to another edition of your favorite psychic podcast, the Psychic Funhouse, back on the air this Friday evening, October 21st. Spooktober is the month, and we're continuing our tradition of honoring all things spooktacular during October by having a discussion tonight in between callers about herbs, herbs that are specific to this time of year in that they have interesting spiritual properties. So we'll have a plant-centered show tonight, and we'll also be taking readers' calls for psychic and clairvoyant readings. Usually I'm joined by my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Mr. Michael J. Espinoza, but he is away on assignment this week, and so I am flying solo. We definitely send out our love and spiritual support to our friend Michael. We'll be back joining us next week. So, yes, well, so it's been a good week up here in Psychic Funhouse Northland, getting things put to sleep in the Gardein before the weather changes, and also getting ready for all that fall has to bring. We've had some smoke in the air, finally raining today after weeks, it seems like, of dryness. So that's a welcome addition to the weather pattern, not the least of which to get the air cleared out, but also just to moisten things up a bit. The sun was nice, but now the rain is back. So herbs. Well, as some of you may know, comes up from time to time, I am a certified clinical herbalist, and as such, I spend a lot of my waking moments thinking about and interacting with plants. And so my definition of an herb is pretty liberal. It's anything that is potentially useful, which pretty much includes all the plants. And if I'm going by Chinese, other Asian and related cultures, they include herbs. They include things in the herbal category that are non-vegetal in nature. And that would include insects, animal parts, all sorts of other stuff. So the definition of herbs and herbalism can be as constricted and exclusive or as wide and inclusive as you like. They tend to be rather inclusive. So tonight we're going to talk about five different herbs as we go through our program and talk about how they relate to this month. I have taught for many, many years, too many probably, a class that I like to call Plants of Power for spiritual and shamanic properties of herbs. And so at least once a year, I gather my students and we get to revel in the different fascinating properties of plants that have been recognized throughout the ages as having more than an average use to them. Something about them humanity is linked to in terms of their pretty amazing spiritual properties. So, besides medicinal. So the first herb I wanted to spend a little time talking about is called mugwort. And mugwort is the common name for this plant. It's located here in the North American continent as well as in Eurasia. It's a Artemisia is its botanical or Latin name. And we'll spend a little time talking about the origin of that name. It's kind of interesting. I like mugwort because it just has a really unique, pungent, kind of tangy scent to it, although it varies depending on which species you're looking at. And it's useful for a lot of different things. I tend to use it probably more for its spiritual aspects than its medicinal uses, but it does have some significant uses medicinally. It has a bitter taste to it, and if you know anything about how your digestive system works, bitters are really good for toning your digestion, keeping it in shape, right? When you taste something bitter, it actually starts a whole process from the beginning of your mouth all the way to the end that can help move food along, help your digestion improve, and that sort of thing. So, mugwort helps with circulation, and so for that reason, it's been used for everything from menstruation to as an abortifacient, because it's so good at stimulating circulation, particularly uterine circulation. So good, in fact, coming into contact or working with mugwort is contraindicated when you are experiencing an excessive menstrual flow or during pregnancy because of the concerns with its actions on the uterine muscle and blood flow to the uterus. But because it's stimulating, it's good for bringing blood to areas. So it's often used in formulas for bruises or sprains or strains. It's a really good herb to have on hand for a variety of different reasons. So spiritual uses, and I should say, you know, since we're talking about herbs and we'll touch on medicinal properties, you know, this show that we do every week is for entertainment purposes only. If you're interested in using herbs, my best advice to you is to do your own research and also contact the trusted local herbalist before you dabble in anything. There can be contraindications that I may not discuss or that you may not know about unless you work with somebody who's familiar with these plants, like a naturopath or a certified clinical herbalist like myself. Now, as for the other aspects of our show, the other disclaimer is since we're an entertainment-only program, we don't give any medical, relationship, financial, legal, et cetera, advice. Everybody here is just for the entertainment of it all. Okay? All right. So, other things that are interesting about mugwort. So, chemically, there's a chemical in there called thujone, T-H-U-J-O-N-E. And thujone has some interesting properties to it. In small amounts, it acts as a stimulant, but in larger amounts, it can be toxic. There's other things in there like tannins, inulin, which is a long chain starch, artemisinin, and it has a mild hallucinogenic chemical that increases our perception of the color purple, according to one study, which is interesting. So Artemisia, just to talk about the origin of the species name for a minute. There was an actual person called Artemisia in Greek times. She was a queen who lived around the 4th century B.C. Right? So the other name for Artemis, who is also a goddess, goddess of the hunt, goddess of the forest, is Diana. Right? She's also shares control of the moon in different religions and spiritual traditions. So Artemisia created one of the ancient seven wonders of the world after her husband Mausolus passed on, called the mausoleum, which is where we get the word for a tomb, an above-ground tomb. She built this monument in his honor, named it Mausoleum, and became famous in her own right as an architect and herbalist, and was in charge of Anatolia, the region of Greece known as Anatolia for many, many years. So Artemisia genus honors her. So what do we like to do with mugwort? Well, mugwort is a really good herb to use for clarity, right? So when you feel like you're having a difficult time making a decision, or there's mental or emotional confusion and uncertainty, mugwort is your go-to. And you can use mugwort in a variety of ways. You could make a tea of it, probably not the most tasty herb, but you could have a little bit to get things started to help you clarify. Bitters tend to sharpen your mental functions. And it also is good for calming your mental and emotional state, clearing your mind. And mugwort probably is used most commonly for its visionary purposes. It's a really excellent dreamer, so much so that you can actually get too much of it in your system. It'll strengthen the will of people who feel powerless, counters negativity and depression, and it works to help counter feelings of helplessness by allowing us to connect with our own inner resources and strength and wisdom. It's often medicinal, but also emotional and spiritual uses. And of course, because it's Artemisia, considered a woman's herb, but men can use it too, just like other things. So, what else? So, talked about tea. It's a really excellent herb to use as a smudge. So, smudging, if you're not familiar with that, is basically burning substances. So, you can make a bundle of dried mugwort. Obviously, if you're going to use anything where fire is involved, you want to be incredibly careful about that. But smudging with mugwort is really a wonderful way to use its energy for cleansing. You can use it with different intention for love, for healing, for prophecy. As I said before, it encourages dreams. It's also a plant that was used by witches and also is protective against negative energies and bad witchcraft. So anytime you see mugwort growing around somebody's dwelling, it's an indication that there's somebody there with spiritual knowledge, be they a healer or a shaman or a witch themselves. So one last thing about mugwort that's pretty cool to know is it's associated with bear energy. Arctos is named for bear, and Artemisia has bear medicine, which is very healing. So all sorts of stuff I could say about mugwort, but that's a little taste to get us started. And so we'll talk about more herbs as the program progresses. And for now, we'll go ahead and take our first call. So on the program, we like to, when we go to the phones, mention your area codes, you know, you're coming up, and then we ask you if you're okay with that to give us your first name and where you're calling from. So looks like we got some callers. Always good. All right, so we're going to go to this number. This is area code 630. Hi there, you're on the Psychic Funhouse with Lawrence Birch. What's your name? Where are you calling from, please?
Hello, it's Dion.
It's the one, the only. Hey, Dion. How are you?
Hi. Good. I miss Michael.
We always miss Michael. Yeah. Yeah. He'll be back next week, though. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to have to look up about mugwort and make sure I know exactly what it looks like. So when I run into it, I'm like, oh, yeah, a witch lives in that house.
Yeah.
Right.
Good to know who you're dealing with. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fun plant. It's pretty easy to grow, and it has many, many uses. Yeah. So.
But you do a lot with herbs. Do you sell herbs? Or?
I do sell my herbs. Yes, I do. Yeah.
Who, like, can anyone buy them, or how do you sell them?
Well, I had my herbs and different products and things on sale online for a number of years. But as you mentioned, my website's kind of out of date. I haven't updated in a while. So most of my clients are kind of what I call my legacy clients at this point. But I have tinctures. I have, you know, salves and oils and different preparations and things like that. So eventually what I'll do, hopefully by the end of the year, is I'll have a renewed website that has a kind of a club or membership page that you land on. And that way I can sell to you with a little less FDA scrutiny, because they've been kind of coming down on people offering herbal preparations, mostly for good reason, but it can be a little prohibitive when you get a letter from the FDA that they're going to come and investigate your business because they don't like you selling this, that, or the other thing. Mostly that has to do with making false claims about your products. But so,
did you ever look into selling? Because I know you're pretty like your expertise is up there. Selling your formulas or your strains or your herbs to like companies that like purchase for essential oils or like, you know, soaps or other like products?
So are you asking if I've ever sold my herbal products or herbs to companies before? Is that what your question was?
Yeah.
I have. Mm-hmm. I've done some consulting for different companies about herbal product lines they're developing, and I've also wildcrafted. So I've gone out and gathered plant material for companies to use in their products, different formulations. So, mm-hmm. Yep. Mostly have. Yeah. So I also do health consultations for people, and that's where a lot of my herbal preparations go to, is clients who are looking to either improve or support their health using herbal and nutritional supplements and things like that. So, so I do products, I do classes, and I do consults. That's kind of my three main areas of herbal focus.
Great. That's great.
Yeah.
So I've been, I want to report back about the job search. Okay, so this week I found one, and I thought it was perfect for me because it was working in the disaster recovery down in Florida. It was a remote job. Like, I would be doing field inspections, but they would also pay for my relocation to go down And they said, you know, they want to start on Halloween. And I'm like, that's perfect for me, you know, because, like, I'm ready to go. And, I mean, I'm starting to feel like nobody wants me. It's weird. I've been applying for a long time. I'm still working with Windows. I'm still working on the sequel. The sequel is
good.
The sequel is really, yeah. It's like 40% done, but like even the 60% that's left won't take very long. So the sequel and like promoting that and things like that. But I mean, I'm just getting a little frustrated. Like, well, what about like, because I know that I'm capable of doing something. And I've been applying online, only basically using Indeed, because I really just like Indeed. I think it's great. It keeps track of all of my applications, if people have looked at my resume, blah, blah, blah. But so far, no offers.
So tell me more about disaster relief aspect. So you're in play with that, or you're still wondering about it, or?
No, I've been applying for those jobs just because it's like I do have some experience with that. And, I mean, when I go down to Florida, I'm going to be selling impact windows. Like, that's I've already, like, started, like, advertising for that. Yeah, and, like, all week I spent the whole week getting familiar with the products and the manufacturer and stuff like that. So it's not like I don't do anything all day. I do. I just keep going back and forth with, like, well, I work for myself, but why am I applying for work? But, like, these jobs, they're temporary jobs. Like, the one that I applied for, it was for 18-month contract. Well, that's good enough for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can do that for a year, 18 months, no problem. I just feel like, I don't know what I'm missing as far as, like, yeah, I'd like to stay being self-employed, but, I mean, I would need a pretty good contract to come in, and I haven't gotten any recently.
Yeah. Well, you know, I understand what it's like to have your own business, you know, especially if it's a small business and you're running it pretty much on your own, which I'm pretty sure you are. So, and then, you know, to want to do, get some additional income going that's stable and it's going to help you establish yourself in your new location down there in Florida. So, you know, I don't find any fault with your process, and I wouldn't get down on yourself in terms of, feeling like, you know, you're getting personally rejected by the people that haven't gotten back to you yet and hired you. I really think that's a smart angle, is to see about getting hired by either the state or the feds, or maybe even a private contractor is doing disaster restoration, because there was a really big hit down there and they're going to need a lot of people to help rebuild things. So
exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And the window thing's brilliant, right? Because that's a go-to, you know, hands down. People are going to, you know, want to get your product in their structures for sure. So, you know, definitely don't take it personally, Dion. You know, once people get to know you, I'm sure they're going to really appreciate who you are. You just have to keep being persistent until you get your foot in the door. So,
okay.
Don't get down on yourself.
I won't. I'm not.
Okay.
It's just, ugh.
Okay.
I just have to remember that it's just a process. That's all. Well,
yeah.
It's good checking in with you.
As always. Yeah, we love hearing from you. Yeah.
I'll be back.
I know you will. That's the best part. Yeah. And good luck with book number two. I'm excited to hear how that goes and hear you complete it. And that's going to be another great addition to your previous work.
I know. I'm super excited about that one. And, like, just to conclude on that one, like, I was talking to one of my friends, like, 2 days ago, and she's like, you're moving so far. And I go, but listen, I'm throwing some pretty big bombs down. I'm like, it's in my best interest not to be anywhere near the immediate proximity, because, like, I'm really exposing corruption on, like, a federal level. Like, I'm even, like, fucking over the FBI. So, yeah, I kind of want to be, like, in an area where it's harder for people to come and get me. Like, I understand that, like, people would find you anywhere, but I just feel like the distance makes it harder for them to keep track of me. You know what I mean? I feel like for my own personal safety, after publishing the second book, that I definitely should be at arm's length from, like, you know, like, because I'm exposing corruption. So it's best to be pretty far away once you throw those bombs like that, right?
Well, I definitely think, you know, if you have the courage to expose some malfeasance and some corruption and bad doing, you definitely need to watch your back. So, it's not paranoid to be concerned about how people are going to react to the information you're going to bring out. And you've already gotten reaction from your first book, so it makes sense to protect yourself. Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. I know you have other callers, so I don't want to keep you, but I appreciate you. I appreciate you.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Dion. We appreciate you. It's always good to hear from you.
I'll call back next week.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah,
namaste.
Yeah, work's coming, so don't despair.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thanks, Dion. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
All right. So, continuing on with our herbal explorations, let's talk about another plant that is near and dear to my heart, and that would be tobacco. So, tobacco is a plant in the Solanaceae family. So Solanaceae's, tomatoes, potatoes, tobacco, other plants. Most people have some kind of opinion about tobacco, right? You may never have heard of mugwort or artemisias, but pretty much everybody around the world has heard of tobacco because it's so popular, so famous or infamous, depending. So it's one of those plants that you have an opinion about one way or the other. So the Latin name for tobacco is nicotiana, and that came from a Portuguese person named João Nicote, who was credited with bringing the tobacco plant from the New World to the Old World into France. And tabac was what the pipe was called by the native people in Haiti, which is where the cultivated tobacco came from. So tobacco, you know, is a pretty interesting plant. It's a stimulant, right? And in large doses, it can actually act as a poison, right? So if you took all the cigarette package, for example, and made a tea out of all of them, once and drank it down, you could probably end up with some pretty serious cardiac issues and leave the planet. So you don't want to do that. So people take it in smaller doses by smoking it or as snuff, which has kind of gone out of fashion, you know, sucking it up through your nose, or chew, right, putting tobacco leaf in between your cheek and gums. Even though it's considered to be a stimulant, it has the ability to relax the bronchial tubes in small dosages. So at one time, believe it or not, it was used as a remedy for asthma. Nicotine can be absorbed through the skin, as we know, if people use patches. It's been used topically throughout the ages as a painkiller, muscle relaxant, and a variety of different things, not just internally. So these days, you know, we have a pretty antagonistic relationship, and maybe even a love-hate relationship is a way to characterize it, with tobacco. Obviously, addiction's an issue, and you know, having tobacco is something that you can't really control your use with is a problem, because it can lead to all sorts of long-term health effects when you love tobacco a little bit too much, let's say. Lung issues, obviously, things like cancer and other things. But it's interesting, you know, if you, you know, some people are able to moderate their use of tobacco, particularly if it's more natural, without some of the chemicals that can increase its addictive ability. And it does have a missile effect. You know, people get up in the morning, they have their first cup of coffee, and they have a smoke, and the combination of the bitters from the coffee and the stimulation on the digestive tract from tobacco actually gets your bowels moving. So some people, that's their ritual for the morning. And believe it or not, people taking a smoke break, that's often the only time during the day when they really breathe in deeply. So if they could somehow just, you know, set the cigarette aside and just go outside to as clean a place as possible and breathe in deeply for 10 or 15 minutes, they have some really wonderful benefits without any of the side effects of tobacco smoke. They should have, instead of smoke breaks, breathing breaks and meditation breaks. Spiritually, tobacco has a pretty intense energy. Some cultures it's considered to have a male energy, so associated with fire. And there's a really wonderful teacher named that has a book out called Plant Spirit Medicine, Elliot Cowan, who's an acupuncturist. And he teaches classes and helps people connect to the spirit of plants. And in one of his classes, he talks about tobacco and the energy that tobacco has as a really strong force that can be used to help protect and to heal and to bring awareness of the other plant communities. We like tobacco because it has the ability to also bring in spirits. Tobacco has burned a lot of cultures, particularly here in Turtle Island, as an offering, as a way of honoring your ancestors, but also as a way of protecting any work that you might be doing in the spirit world, and also bringing in spirits who are attracted to the properties of tobacco. So it's a nice plant for that reason as well. And it's often something I leave as an offering when I go gathering plants in the wild, just as a way of showing respect and thanks. So, all right. So let's take another call. This one's area code 520. Hi there. You're on the Psychic Funhouse with Lawrence Birch. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi. Yeah,
hi.
This is Lisa calling you from Arizona. I called a bit ago, and I still it still sticks in my mind your description of going into a co-op and taking a your experience with, you know, taking a both glasses and nose if you don't feel like talking to people.
Right. Yeah.
Because I had to talk about how I had, I had to move back to a place that I didn't want to come back ever to. I'd been here a couple of decades, and I'm here. And I went to the farmer's market a couple of weeks ago with my little grandson, and he's shouting to everyone, you know, because he knows, and he was visiting me when he was a baby there. And, you know, this is my grandma. And so this man was sitting on a bench at the farmer's market. I saw him. I hadn't seen him for like 3 years. and I've been mm-hmm. gone a year and a half. And he, this man has always been neutral. Very, we were involved serendipitously, not planned, in similar volunteer projects or poetry readings. Or, and he knew my significant other who died before he knew me. Anyway, this man, as I was approaching with my grandson to go wherever my grandson was leading me, the man gave me a grotesque face of anger. And I knew when I saw that, I thought, okay, he's joined a side on the town gossip. He's taken a side. And I'd never seen him ever demonstrate anything that high emotional, anything. He's always been very vanilla ice cream, you know, very neutral. So I want to know, I mean, I came back with my grandson and stood in front of him very casually when my grandson was leading me back. I stood right in front of the man, and I simply said to my knees were like 2 inches, if even that, away from the man sitting down. And I said to my grandson, I said, well, is there anything in this market that you would like? And my grandson said, oh, I just want to pet the dog. And I said, well, we won't pet the dog, but we'll move on. In other words, I was giving that man a FU and moved to my car with my grandson. I want to know, I plan on going to the farmer's market again tomorrow by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you pick up that this is going to be an enduring energy, or is it just going to dissipate? I was shocked. I was blindsided, actually.
Uh-huh. From this person in particular, or just in general from the community?
Well, yeah, it told me that person, and then it also told me that something's going on in town that I had kind of maybe guessed, but I think my guess was very mild compared to what that man grimaced at me. You know, I was thrown. But, you know, my public facade is, this is my public facade, that I don't care. You know, that's how I walk around. Internally, you know, I go home and I try to manifest healing powers and distance myself and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so maybe we should talk about that a little bit, that aspect of things, you know, how being here since, from what I've gathered, you know, that you talked about, it isn't going to change anytime soon. In other words, you're not going to leave this area, right? So this is kind of an ongoing.
No, I'm here for the long haul. I'm here to do business, tie up loose ends. I'm here, I had to come. It was work-oriented reason that I came because of my the passing of my significant other. And my significant other, I left for a bit of time about a year and a half ago because he was just doing some stuff, and I got very upset, and I hit my bottom with the relationship. And I said, you know, I'm going to go live near my grandson 5.5 hours away. And my significant other was furious. He was just furious. And, you know, I'm told he was broken, and we remained in contact, and we were reconciling just before he passed. He didn't know he was going to pass. I didn't know he was going to pass. But in the time when I first left, there was a woman that had always been after him, and she got back in touch with him when I had left. And so she was there with my significant other, and, oh, tell me everything. You know, what did she do? Oh, yeah. So now he's gone, and she's still here. And she, by the way, she abandoned him. She left when she realized she wasn't going to get anything out of the relationship from him. And so anyway, he and I were reconciling, and she got wind of that too. So, but now she has spread, she has spearheaded stories. Like I said, he was very furious when I left. So he was saying things that, in fury, you know, and she doesn't, she's not shy about embellishing whatever it is.
So is the ire that's coming from the community that's directed at you, people are being put up to it by this person, or is it because they have a perception about you're being responsible in some way for the demise of your friend or
things? It's so documented. I mean, it's such a tiny town. It's so documented how involved I was, how, you know, there's a paper trail, there's other people here. You know, it's not 100% against me. It's just that little circle. And I was shocked. I was shocked that they wouldn't check it out with me, that they're going from what she, and she's always been that way, always. You know, just taking something and embellishing it. And
do you have people there in town who are supportive of you? Or like you said, this gentleman, neutral crowd?
Oh, yeah. Okay. That fella is part of a circle that touches her, you know, like a it's an indirect circle. You know, we're all, there's different circles here of society. Mm-hmm. And I have people that support me for sure. And there's no, I mean, it was so clear, it was so obvious how involved I was with him the last, I mean, almost a year, you know, where we were, you know, and I was here, I was present when I could be, and I was, you know, I was very involved in working alongside of him, getting things done. You know, it was very visible. You know, we were seen together. People that worked in different sectors of society have documentation where I had to call them to check on him, you know, to check on him. I would make those calls. And so, I mean, it's clear. The nurse that was at his bedside when I was there with him the whole entire time, all the days. But I called the nurse after my significant other passed. I called the nurse like a day later, and I said, I just want to thank you. Before I can even get the words out, the nurse said to me, you went far and beyond. You went far and beyond dealing for him. Okay. But I don't take those words. They don't have value to me, because how can you put a value when you care so deeply for someone?
So is your hurt centered around the fact that these people are invalidating your...
I'm confused. Not so much her. I mean, I knew her character. It was... I can't control other people. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
By, you know, if someone came up to me and they said blah, 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 blah about someone else, and that was a whole different dimension I never knew about that person, I would say to myself, I am not going to accept that. I have to go and check it out with them, if it even is my responsibility to do that, you know.
Right. Okay.
That man saw different sides to me. You know, we were in volunteers. We were in poetry groups. We were in soirees that I organized. He organized. You know,
so can
he
I
knew
ask
my
you something?
Significant. Yeah.
So what's preventing you from, I know you saw an expression, right? But it's possible that that could mean a bunch of different things. But what's preventing you from, you know, just say on the off chance you see him tomorrow, from interacting with him and just finding out, you know, how he feels about things, or just having a conversation with him and see how that goes? Is that too risky, or?
Not risky at all.
You know what I mean? Because in a way, it's kind of the same. It's a setup for you too, right? Because you've got these people circulating around that are kind of on your periphery, but you also interact with them, and they have some access to information from at least this one person, but they may not know all sorts of stuff. And the best source is you, but yet, you know, because they've, you know, in some cases overtly taken sides, so you know what their position is. In some cases they may appear to, or you know, you don't know, right? So there's a lot of just assumptions, it sounds like, going on all over the place. And you know, like you said, you can't control what people think, but if it's this thing, because I know you've talked about it with us for a while, that's really affecting you in a you know, in a negative way, then it seems like, you know, one of the antidotes might be just when you have the one-on-one opportunity with these people who say, hey, you know, not coming from a place of defensiveness, like you have to tell your side of the story, but just having an interaction with them that's human, right? Because here's the thing, like, even that person who sounds like is the you know, naysayer and spreading rumors about you, you know, which, you know, that's never a good thing. They also have to have some side to them that's redeemable, you know. And so I would think, you know, the people that maybe have taken her words over yours would also grant you that liberty as well, right? Maybe in their mind you did some of these things that they don't agree with, but you're still a human being and, you know, deserve to be understood or forgiven or to be heard. And if that's not what they want to do, like, for example, if you interact with this guy tomorrow and he still gives you the stink face and won't talk to you or pull some stuff that you know is not true because he's heard it from this other person, then, you know, it's like you said, okay, well, right now this person is not going to be open-minded enough to really interact with me in a constructive way, and that's their choice. But, you know, I think because you're going to spend a lot of time with these people in the sense that they're in the place that you live, and you can't just shut yourself up and avoid them. You know, you're going to have to come up with some practical strategy so that you don't feel like every time you see people who are, you know, against you or whatever, you're going to end up going home and having this, you know, period where you're going to question yourself about, did you do the right thing or what's going on or who am I, or, you know, these things that are eating away at you, right? You got to have a strategy where you just, you know, let these people go, bless them and move on, and draw your strength and support and nurturing from people who know your side of the story and care about you enough to be supportive, right? Because, you know, like you said, you can't control these people. You can just figure out the best way to, you know, live your best life.
You know what? I love you. I love your word. Are you a Buddhist? Are you?
No, I'm not. I like
friend
Buddhist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a friend that is a Buddhist. Well, you know, you're completely accurate about what you say, and I could just have a, you know, like a, hey, how it's going? Haven't seen you in a long time, and I just want to say hi, and what's up? You know, anything new? I could start that conversation. I could.
Yeah.
You know, I've just, all my life, I've never been good about doing that kind of thing, and that's actually the mature route to take. That is the route that I keep telling myself at this age, where I want to be. You know, you're giving me some ideas here, an opportunity to create for myself that's actually the mature route, you know. And so I will really receive these words and look at it and pick and choose, and I can, you know, really put the energy and the time into manifesting, letting go, you know, doing on the inside work. The outside facade of me comes across as, you know, I've had people from my own family of origin say, oh, you can eat nails, you know, that kind of stuff. But I, you know, internally, I'm a bowl of Jell-O, like most of us on the planet. You know, we can give out a good facade, but inside we're like mush. And so anyway, you have given me some ideas to mull over, and it's an opportunity. And it's like the fable where someone at the head of the human group says, go out and, you know, this is your assignment, like kind of Mission Impossible. If you decide to take this mission, this is your chance to do this. So now I know in my head, you've given me opened some doors inside of me recognizing there are opportunities here. It's not a shut door. It's not one way or another. That's the lay of the land. And
yeah. Well, yeah. And no matter what happens, you know, from an objective viewpoint, let's say somebody set everybody down that's somehow connected to this and said, okay, well, you're responsible for 10% of this person's suffering and you're responsible for 5 or, you know, whatever the reality is, it shakes out. You know, it's not like you murdered an entire planet, right? So whatever people feel about it, you know, from what your perspective is, obviously that's all I know, it just doesn't seem proportional or you're giving it more energy than it needs to be. And, you know, like you said, you've got this public persona that's like in eat nails and this private persona that's jellyfish. It might be nice to kind of have a meeting of those two extremes within yourself somewhere in the middle so you don't have to feel like you've constantly got to put on a facade that takes a lot of your energy and then come home and just like all this stuff that you know, buried for the day just comes erupting up and now you've got to deal with all that, you know. And it's a risk. If you're not that kind of a person who is confrontative, I totally get it. But you know, there's
you
no
know
rewards taking risk. So.
I totally am listening and open to this. And Oprah Winfrey said a million years ago when she had her television program a million years ago, she said she could listen to millions of compliments all day long. And then she gets the one criticism and lies awake all night thinking about that one criticism. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. that's how I am wired that way, and I'm trying to rewire myself in a different way.
Okay.
You ask, you know, do I have people, you know, that I can connect with or positive people? I have a ton of people like that here, a ton of people that like me. I like them.
Okay.
It's mutual because
I
know who I am. I'm a good person. And, you know, so that we don't, in this part of the planet that we live in this place that I live in, a lot of us don't have television. And we entertain ourselves sometimes by torturing each other. It's unfortunate, but it happens. I swear to God.
Well, you don't have to participate. Well, don't participate in, especially don't participate in the self-torture because it's not worth it. Yeah.
No. Not even karma.
All right. Well, I think you're going to be okay. You know, it's just, it's a process. And like you said, you're working on yourself and, you know, you get some ground that you gain and then you take a few steps back and you get back in and, you know, until you get to the top of the mountain. So things will work out.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Love it. I love it. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, you take care. Have a good rest of your week.
You know that wart? You know, what were you talking about? That first plant wart? What was it, wart?
Uh-huh. Mugwort. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Someone that was a mentor of mine for a very long time in my life, and she was highly skilled, highly degreed, and she towards the end before she retired, she was talking about different plants and different herbs to use for, you know, just to ingest because then it would adjust a perspective, help to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
And she mentioned that plant. I remember she mentioning that plant, not in plant form. You know, all that stuff comes in capsules and stuff like that and supplement stuff form. I don't like to take manufactured, even dry taking vitamin D, but I do because it's important. But I like it in natural form. And these days,
it's important to take, if you buy it in capsule form, it's important to find out who the manufacturer is, because if it's manufactured in a developing country or China, there are a lot of impurities like lead and arsenic and things like that. Do you have a recommendation if you buy it in capsule form where it's safe to, what brand would be safe to look at buying? I usually go to the food co-op to buy like my vitamin D thing.
Are you talking about mugwort? Are you talking about something else?
Vitamin D. I haven't looked at
vitamin D.
Mugwort.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But
yeah.
Mugwort,
well,
you know, if I were to get it in capsule form.
As far as supplements go, you know, and this isn't like a commercial endorsement by any means, but Solaray has been a good company that I've worked with. And then
let me write that down. Solaray, okay.
And then there's a pretty old-time herbalist named is John Christopher, and he created a product line that's still around called Nature's Way, and they're, you know, I would say they're pretty solid.
Oh, yeah, I'm very familiar with Nature's Way. So if you like Nature's Way, okay, I kind of wonder about these because of, like, the things that I've already mentioned, you know, that are not.
Sure. Well, sure.
Yeah, good. They're not good.
Yeah,
they're
Nature's
not pure.
Yeah, they're not, like, the best of the best, but they're really solid, and, you know, I think they have good manufacturing practices, and the nice thing about them is they're pretty available just about everywhere, so, and they're decent quality, you know, so.
Well,
okay.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate
your
time.
You're welcome. Good luck with everything.
Yeah.
Stay in touch.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Take care of yourself, Lisa. Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So, one other herb to mention. Most of us don't think about trees as herbs. We're used to thinking of herbs as these little fuzzy plants that go down on the ground. But trees are also considered herbs. And they have their own interesting properties and strengths. And I came across this lovely poem by Sylvia Plath, if you remember who she was. She definitely came to an untimely end, unfortunately, but being a poet is hard. She wrote this lovely poem called The Moon and the Yew Tree, and that's the herb I wanted to celebrate here for a moment by reading this poetry, this poem that she wrote. So this is The Moon and the Yew Tree. This is the light of the mind, cold and planetary. The trees of the mind are black. The light is blue. The grasses unload their griefs on my feet as if I were God. Prickling my ankles and murmuring of their humility, humy, spiritous mists inhabit this place. Separated from my house by a row of headstones, I simply cannot see where there is to get to. The moon is no door. It is a face in its own right, white as a knuckle and terribly upset. It drags the sea after it like a dark crime. It is quiet. With the gape of complete despair, I live here. Twice on Sunday, the bells startle the sky, eight great tongues affirming the resurrection. At the end, they soberly bong out their names. The yew tree points up. It has a Gothic shape. The eyes lift after it and find the moon. The moon is my mother. She's not sweet like Mary. Her blue garments unloose small bats and owls. How I would like to believe in tenderness. The face of the effigy, gentled by candles, bending on me in particular its mild eyes. I have fallen a long way. Clouds are flowering, blue and mystical over the face of the stars. Inside the church, the saints will all be blue, floating on their delicate feet over the cold pews, their hands and faces stiff with holiness. The moon sees nothing of this. She is bald and wild, and the message of the yew tree is blackness, blackness and silence. Well, Sylvia wrote some pretty heavy poetry. It's interesting, you know, just talk about use before we go to our last caller a little bit. Use have this really interesting association with the dead. They often are planted in graveyards because they are said to grow their roots into the mouths of the dead and be their voices. You can talk to a yew and the voices of the dead will come through them. Yews have a toxicity to them, but toxic medicinals used in the right amount can also be therapeutic, right? Think of Taxol that's been used to treat mainly breast cancer, but other forms of cancer. Yew does have some medicinal uses beyond that. The needles have been used as expectorants. It's also been used for bladder issues, urinary issues. The yew is a plant that commands respect. And, you know, if you don't respect yews, trees are like this. They can really come back on you. It has this association with death and represents access to the other world. And so, you know, in our country, we have a lot of misconceptions and fear about death. Maybe at a future show, we'll talk about shamanic concept of psychopomp, which is helping people cross over. You can help us overcome our fear of death and find a great sense of place and stillness within, right? The yew tree is a good resource to go to help us understand our existence here in our corporal form, but also our spiritual existence. And in doing so, it can help us understand and begin to disentangle the traumas that we've experienced here on planet Earth, right? So, you know, one last thing about yew is it's not about taking our problems for us or solving things. It's more about giving us insight to grow through them. Yew isn't teaching us just about death. It's also teaching us about rebirth, right? So it helps us see beyond our limitations. Pretty powerful medicine. All right, let's go to another caller here. This is area code 203. Hello, you're on the Psychic Funhouse with Lawrence Birch. This is your opportunity to talk with us about your herbal experience or to have a reading. What's your name and where are you calling from, please?
Hi, it's Pat in Connecticut.
Hey, Pat, how's Connecticut?
Hi. Hi. I'd love a reading, but this has been, I came in late, but it's been a really interesting show. And I only knew a few lines of that poem by Sylvia Plath, the one about the moon dragging its white knuckles. So I have no idea. It was a much longer poem. So thanks for sharing that. And I'll just talk about this. I walk my dog all over the property where I live. It's some apartment buildings, and it's in the city. And there's one little area in a church next door, tiny little grassy area with the pines. And I saw tons of, all of a sudden, popped up. I think it's called Amanita muscaria, the mushrooms that you see in fairy tales that turn red.
Oh, yeah.
And then, okay, mm-hmm. So I think that could be mistaken.
Not LSD, but another hallucinogen. Muscarine, maybe is what you're thinking of, because they're Amanita muscaria, the fly agaric, the red cap and the white spots. You know?
That's it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just delighted in it and took pictures. There were so many, and not a lot of mushrooms have come up this year at all because it's been so dry. And I walked by the day, and I thought, oh, I'm going to bring it something for the fairies to thank them for creating all that. And I was sure they were living there And it's just my imagination. And they were all kicked over.
Really?
And I, yeah, and I saw some cut grass dumped in the corner, and I think, just excuse me, but a stupid landscape guy, you know, dumped and decided he needed to kill all that, kick it all down. I was so upset, and I just, a terrible thought, but I just hope the fairies go after him and flatten the tire or something. It just seemed so unsafe. It was like just only a few days that these things popped up and they barely lived, and it might have been a whole little fairy dwelling that was just destroyed by man. We just destroy so much.
Well, can I share something that might help cushion your hurt feelings for the fairy ring?
Please.
Well, you know, we have kind of a fear / fascination with mushrooms, right? Because, you know, toadstools, that's a nickname for mushrooms, kind of a not so positive image. You know, they are responsible for poisoning people, you know, probably every year, a few handful of people. I had a mycology professor who said that actually mushrooms, comparatively speaking to, you know, non-fungi, so plant world plants, are actually safer to ingest than plants are, because plants have much wider toxins available at their disposal, so to speak. But the other thing that I learned in the class is that, you know, the mushrooms that we see that are above ground or growing on trees and different things, those are actually, you can kind of put those to apples coming off a tree. The majority of the mushroom is actually called mycelia, and they're these fine threads. You may have heard of that, and they're growing underground. So, so they're perfectly okay with, you know, I mean, maybe they don't like it as a plant organism or a fungal organism to have their fruiting bodies kicked over. But the spores were probably already released, so they did their job, even though the landscaper, whoever got to them, you know, kind of destroyed the image that you got to see. Unless the ground got disturbed to some great extent, they're pretty hardy and able to, you know, continue with their lifespan doing their thing. But the great thing is you got to see it before it got destroyed. So that's pretty special.
True. The
Amanitas are really amazing. Organism for sure. So,
well, that makes me feel much, much. It does. It
Good.
Makes me feel much better. And knowing that it all exists underground, I'm going to go back and talk to them and bring them trinkets, the fairies. Thank you.
Sure.
I'll ask you a quick question if you have time.
Okay, go ahead.
I've had a big change in my life and have found a big surprise to me, an online church that is going to sort of minister to me for 17 weeks. And I'm really learning for the first time religion in the way that I can accept it, like it, and maybe even change me. And I've also just started with a hypnotist, brand new, never done this before. And I was absolutely fascinated by this guy's mind, and who knows how this hypnotism will work. It's I think, unusual. There's no real talking unless I want to. There's no going to the past, to old issues. It's basically looking forward. So just if you have a take on either of these things as far as really making a change in my life. The last 2 years have been two of the worst years ever, ever in my life. And I've had a really extremely difficult life. So I managed to take a turn. I actually felt, even in spite of that, my light was going out because it had just been so traumatic for 2 years. So I've made it. I've made the turn, and sort of gifts are coming to me now.
Well, that's good. sometimes it's when, you know, things are at their darkest that we find a pathway out, right? Things have to get so depleted or so challenging or even traumatic before they finally bottom out. And then, you know, we're able to start the path to recovering ourselves or whatever it is we feel was taken from us or we've lost. And, you know, I'm sorry that things have been so difficult for you and that the last 2 years have been especially challenging. That's a hard thing. It does sound like, though, that you are pretty resourceful, right, and persistent, which are really good qualities to have when you're up against challenges like you alluded to. And hypnotherapy, you know, and finding a religious practice that really feels compatible with who you are as a person, both of those things individually are really powerful, but doing them, you know, at the same time, you know, I get the sense that that's really going to be quite healing for you. You know, the spiritual life that you'll get connected to through the church that you're a part of, that's also good for community and finding people who are like-minded and people that are looking for things that can help, you know, support and also, you know, be of service to others, which is really, I think, one of the best antidotes for getting outside of our own problems, you know, when we're able to, when we have the energy, is to be of service to others. And it doesn't have to be anything elaborate. It can be as small as holding the door open for somebody, you know, or smiling or whatever, but it can all be more structural. It's very, I think, in our culture to get insular and start, you know, just folding into ourselves and getting overwhelmed by, you know, our own trials and tribulations. But working with other people who may also face similar, even totally different challenges can really give us a perspective on things and help us feel, you know, useful. So I think both of those things are going to be really constructive for you in a lot of ways, in ways that you don't even realize yet, Pat. And then, you know, the other thing is hypnotherapy can be really powerful, and you know, it's important that you have a good trust, and so your working relationship with this person is therapeutic. And I'd be curious to hear how you feel things are changing for you using that aspect of Turner therapy. I've had people come to my classes before when I was teaching at a community college who were really wonderful hypnotherapists, and they made a big difference in people's lives. And it's definitely a useful tool for sure. So so keep us posted about that. But I think you're doing some good things. And self-care is really, really important. So good for you for hanging in there and doing some things that are going to help you out.
Yeah, great. Okay. And herbs are phenomenal. Okay, I'll share one thing. If you want to know herbalists that I think are phenomenal, I'll share one guy with you. I don't know if you want that on the air or not, but I call him when I've got really pretty important questions, and invariably he sends me elsewhere not to get his herbs, but he knows of other things. And this last time asking about stress, that was really doing me in, you know, after 2 years of incredible stress, he recommended Moby Oats. And has been, it's been very interesting. It's taken the edge off as I continue to maybe have another thing hit me stress-wise real hard. I see that there's a, I don't react as much. So that's been a great herb. And another thing that he recommended, I can't remember which is which, but I guess the Milky Oats works for the brain, and maybe this other he recommended, glycine, worked in the body. He said that will help you sleep, and it will help the other side of the stress. And it is amazing. I've struggled with anxiety my whole adult life, sometimes really severe. I was using sal, S-O-A-N-Z-O-E-R-E-N. I think that's how you spell it. They're seeds, which I would cook up and make a tea out of and drink, and that was really great for breaking the anxiety in the morning. But glycine, glycine I take at bedtime. It helps me sleep. It cuts out the anxiety really beautifully.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, it's always nice when you can find something that, you know, is more natural with less potential side effects that, you know, helps you out where you need it. So, yeah. And then milky oats. Yeah, I could do a whole show on oats. People think of oats as, oh, it's just oatmeal. But the herb oats, totally different creature and still
right.
good for stress. It's amazing for stress. It's and it's very nutritive. So herbs that are nutritive really feed
right.
the body and less drug-like. So,
right.
yeah, whoever that person is, it sounds like they've really been able to give you some good information. So kudos to them. So.
This guy travels the world and makes his own tinctures of what he gathers
cool.
all over the world. Yeah. I had no idea.
Sounds like an interesting person.
Very interesting. I had no idea that you knew so much about herbs. I'd love to hear more on another show.
Yeah, well, my co-host who isn't with us tonight is constantly prodding me to do my own podcast on just on herbs, which I should probably do. So maybe, you know, I'll listen to your well and we'll get something going. But, yeah, I do love talking about plants. They're really close to my heart for sure. So
think about it. Thank you
okay.
so much.
Oh, you bet.
Talk
Thanks
again.
For calling. It's always good. All right. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye now. All right. Okay. So you're now going to have one more call. So we're going to go to call, and then I'll finish up the show with one other herb just for things. Okay, so this is area code 714. Hi there, you're on the Psychic Funhouse with Lawrence Birch. What's your
Hi.
Name? Where are you calling from? Hi.
Hi, this is Mai again from Anaheim.
Mai again from Anaheim. Hey, how's Mickey Mouse treating you?
He's Mickey, you know, he does his thing, so.
Never can trust
I was out. Actually I was actually just calling in just to listen to the show, and I Good. Don't really have any comments or questions. You guys have given me a lot to work on in the last couple of times that I actually did get on the show. So one thing that you said a couple of shows ago was that I had a ancestral spirit guide and that's waiting to help me. How do I go about like inviting them into my life to help? Like there's a lot of things that, you know, kind of escapes me, my consciousness, and I could use all the help that the universe is willing to give me. So.
I see. Okay. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions?
Sure.
Okay, Mai. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of a spiritual practice currently, presently?
Not like a formal. Like I've gone to church a few times. More of like I do consult with my psychic a lot, just for that reassurance.
Sure.
I read a lot on, you know, listening to psychology and listening to people that are spiritual but not religious, if that makes sense.
Well, that makes sense. Okay. You know, there's not any one particular way to, begin to establish contact with your ancestors spiritually. One of the things you could do is to start, making altar. Do you know about altars? Okay. Have you seen using have you made an altar before?
My parents have one of my grandparents. You know, sort of a way to yeah, that kind of, 'cause I'm Asian, Vietnamese actually. So it's kind of Buddhism, kind of Confucianism, more of, you know, like really in tune with nature.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Well, so you've got a tradition there that you can call on then to establish your own particular style or twist on it. But and so, you know, ancestors respond to people reaching out with respect. And whenever you do any spiritual work, right, you always want to start with your intention, right? So you want to get clear on what you're doing before you start. So that way, if you get distracted or, you know, you kind of lose your way, you can come back and say, okay, well, my intention is to make connection with an ancestor who I know is wanting to work with me and has some something to share with me, right? So, so whatever you feel drawn to in terms of items you can put on your altar that would be maybe for you culturally appropriate or have some meaning to you in terms of what you would like to present to your ancestor, you know, you can kind of think of it as reestablishing contact with a family member and what would be the appropriate way to show them that you care about them or that they mean something to you. You know, find an object, create a very simple ritual that embodies that. And then when you have a designated place in your home that's specific for that, it's easy to go to that on a regular basis and establish connection and just start a process that opens you up to a deeper spiritual connection to ancestors and maybe to spirit guides that will come and help you with other things as well. So it can be, it can be as very basic or simple or more involved as you want, Mai. It just kind of depends on you. And you can do research about ancestor veneration, or maybe when you have a minute and it feels appropriate, maybe have a talk with your parents about what they do with their altar and why they continue to observe that practice and what it means to them. It might illuminate some things for yourself as well. So just some thoughts. Mm-hmm. So basic ideas. Mm-hmm.
It's for me that sometimes there's an internal conflict of like, well, is it idolatry versus worshiping God, or, you know, I have those conversations and it's, I don't want the conflict obviously because it, it makes me feel a little bad, like I'm betraying something. Because I do believe in God and I do have spirituality. I'm just not a go to church type of person every week because it doesn't really work for me.
I get it. That's fine. Yeah. Well, I think the conflict you're talking about, that's not an uncommon place that people find themselves, particularly if they're kind of in their own path, but they may have had a background or previous experience with their families or in their childhood with a more organized or formal religion or religious upbringing. So, my suggestion for that is to, sit with yourself about, again, what it is you're wanting to do here, right? You're not trying to reach out necessarily to, God or a godlike figure, right, or that type of spirit. You're actually trying to make a connection with one of your family members who's passed on. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Would you have it to have more of information, like what kind of an ancestral guide or an ancestral spirit, like who it could be? or if this is like multiple generation, like a great-great-great-grandparent or something, then I probably wouldn't know who they are.
I don't get the sense that it's somebody from a recent lineage, somebody that would be known to you even through, you know, family history or tradition. I think this is something that goes probably pretty far back, and their position at that time in their existence in the family was the sense I get is more of a matriarch, so it's a female figure, and you know, they have in a way they've kind of taken on the responsibility for watching over members of their family and intervening when they feel like it's necessary to, you know, offer some course corrections. So the sense I get mostly is that this person has a lot of love and well-being that they want to share with you, and they you know, want to communicate that in a way that's more direct than just they have been, either through dreams or other things that are less obvious. But it's kind of a permission thing. That's one of the ways that, you know, and you mentioned idolatry. Sometimes people are concerned about working with spirits because they think they're going to contact a malevolent spirit or, demon, you know, whatever term you want to use, a negative being. One of the safeguards to, you know, when you feel everybody's process, you know, there's similarities, but everybody's process is different, intrinsic to them. But when you're working with guides, particularly for the first time, you know, it's always good to check in and ask what their intention is. You know, are you here for, you know, supportive purposes? Are you a loving spirit? You know, why are you here? What's the intention? And to check in with yourself when you get a response, if that feels authentic or not. Guides that you want to work with are ones that are always loving and unconditional and supportive of you. You know, you don't want to work with guides that are malicious, or they have an agenda, or they're vindictive, or there's something about them that they're trying to get from you, right? It's really spiritual beings are about giving and, you know, being of service. So that makes sense.
And I have another question, and you might not be able to answer it, which is fine. The friend that I have that has the addiction, he actually made efforts, and he got himself into rehab. And he's through his first week, which is awesome, because that's something that no one forced him. There was no ultimatum or anything. He just finally realized that he needed help and he couldn't do it alone. And I keep checking in with my psychic about him, because, you know, I know his human tendencies, right? And, and I'm just like, you know, giving him good wishes and good vibes, but, does he have more of the swirl to go downwards, or is he going to start, like, is he going to start changing his life or being able to change his life, even though he's got a heck of a battle to get back to what he wants?
Do you mind if I ask what's behind your question? Like, why are you asking this particular question?
Like, the ties that I have to him, I just, like, I would feel better, and I feel more at peace knowing that even if he has to go through this world, that he'll end up okay. And if not, then, like, make my peace with it. Does that make sense?
So, yeah, let me deconstruct your question, and you can tell me if I'm getting an accurate interpretation.
Okay.
So,
yes, please.
So, like we talked about before, you know, you kind of reach the end of your rope with this person, and at the same time, you feel really connected to them, and that you weren't sure how to decouple things in a way that would make you feel okay without feeling responsible or even guilty about whatever consequences that befell him after you, you know, making more of a separation between you and him, right?
What
I hear you asking behind your question is, you know, kind of what you asked last time, right? Which was, if I start living my life without him really being a major player in it, is he going to be okay? And my, does that make sense? And so, so my feedback to you about that is two things. One, whether or not he successfully completes rehab, he's just at the beginning, right? Rehab is like the intervention process.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so now, if it is successful, and let's hope that it is, and that'd be wonderful for him if it is, to get free of this, you know, monkey on his back, now he's got to be in recovery for the rest of his life. And that is something you always have to be attentive of, right? You don't just, like, go through rehab and it's done. Now you've made a course correction in your life, and it's a huge transition. You know, your life changes irrevocably when you commit to being in recovery. And it's not for the faint of heart. You know, it's a lot of taking responsibility personally that wasn't being done leading up to this point. And not everybody makes it. Sometimes people go back, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of not uncommon, and it shouldn't be frowned upon, because addiction is a really tough thing. On the other hand, people that have successful recoveries, they do it because, you know, they've made a decision and a commitment to themselves that this is the way that they want their life to go from here on forward. And so, you know, that's all up to him. You really can't do anything other than, you know, what you've already been doing, which is to be supportive of him getting healthier, you know. And so that's just the substance part. The other part, you know, people can be in recovery, and I'm just going to be frank, and still be assholes. I mean, and not, you know, they're just, now they don't have the substance as an excuse anymore, right? So whether or not you're going to be a want, or you're going to want to associate with him, you know, in his recovery phase, that's a whole nother story. But I would say, you know, the main thing for you is to really take a look at, and this is the second part, really take a look at what it is about you that makes you vulnerable to interacting with this person to the detriment of your own well-being, right? Why is it?
What I wasn't saying, and I was pretending, right, is I was wearing that I'm a concerned friend mask, is I will feel really, really crappy if something bad happens to this person because of his choices, even though, like, I don't want to look like the bad guy, basically. But at the same time, I don't want to sacrifice myself on the altar for this person either. And
who's telling you you're the bad guy? Is he telling you that? Or is that you in your...
No, I am. I definitely am. You know, I've had a friend of mine who's in, who does a lot of these types of, like, leadership training. I was like, you know, I was told that I'm addicted to, what do you think my addiction is? And he just told me straight out. He's like, you are addicted to proving that you're unworthy. So you pick people that will give you reinforce that how unworthy you are, and you keep trying and you keep, you know. And I was like, wow, okay, some deep stuff, right? Like taking off my mask, conversation from last week. And he's like, we all have these. We have I'm not worthy, I'm unlovable, I'm stupid, and I'm bad. Those are the four. And you have, like, it's very obvious. You can't see it because you're in it, but it's very obvious that that's what drives you a lot of time, is to try to prove how worthy you are, instead of saying, you know what, I love you as a friend, and what you're doing is not healthy for you, and it's not healthy for me, and I say no. Without any...
Yeah.
Because of this, because of that, and I'm sorry, whatever, but it's no, this is a boundary. You, whenever I help you, I feel bad about me, and I'm not for that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, I took off my mask. There you go. Yeah.
Okay, well, so, good for you. Yeah. Well, I think the person you talked to really hit the target, and you know, and this is the thing that's true pretty much about anyone who's an addict, whether it's to, you know, an emotional situation or a substance. It's not done in a vacuum. Everybody else, you know, so families are addicted. That's how they talk about it, you know, even if they're not using the substance. And so for you, you got your emotional needs met from this person, not in a healthy way, but in a way that supported that false belief you have about yourself that you're not worthy. So you're going to settle for, you know, the love that you're getting from this person, which is, I'm sure, totally conditional and also not really mature. It's not an adult form of love. You know, when people get trapped in the addictive cycle, or this happens with people with trauma a lot too, is that's when their emotional development stops. And we all go through emotional stages of development as we age, you know, even as adults.
Right.
So, you know, and you have to experience that, or you fall behind and you're not really with your peers. And so there's a deficit there. And it's not a judgment or anything. It's just kind of how humans exist. So you also have some things you're going to have to go back and take a look at and say, did I miss out on that? Is that something I need to, you know, explore more about myself, and also in this context of this person? Because I hear you saying a lot of, like, you know, I'm defining myself by what this person is or isn't doing. And you know, I think part of what is to separate yourself from that experience you've had up to this point and say, well, who am I without this person in my life? Do I even like that person? Oh. And if I don't, why am I giving so much value to this person who, if I looked at it really objectively, they were so caught up in their own addiction or whatever that they really couldn't give me anything of what I needed. And yet I was okay with that. That's some fucked up shit. And you have to be really brutally honest about yourself and say, okay, if that's what I really want, then fine. I'm not going to, you know, question this anymore. I'm just going to keep doing this to myself. But if there's a part of me that says, you know, to get something better and I deserve something better, but I need to recalibrate things within myself before I even know what that is, then that's a whole nother pathway and another door that you get to open on your own without this other person's involvement, and you know, learning how to be self-resourceful and honest and emotionally present. You know, that's a lifetime of work for almost all of us. So, you know, but these are choices you make minute by minute, every day, you know, in the short term and the long term. And you get to decide how intense you want it to be, why. But you know, I think it's great, you know, just to finish things up, I think it's great that your friend's in a rehab program. And I also think it's good that you're starting, it sounds like, your own kind of rehab emotionally about stuff.
And you said something that was significant, and I was like fighting against it before, because you said, you know, mm-hmm. we're only able to love someone as much as we love ourselves. And my first thought was, but I can show them and get a non-reaction in my mind, where if I do it and my mind's like, you know, you're going to mess up again. You know, you're not worth it. You know, you're broken. You know that nobody wants you. And, you know, like that internal talk, right? And it's then it's like it spirals and you're just like, how did I end up on the bottom again?
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Well,
absolutely right.
Well, part of your work then is to recognize when that voice starts, you know, its usual chatter that, you know, is complete crap, and to say, you know what, that's not me. It's never been me, and I'm not going to listen to that anymore. And guess what? I love myself, and yeah, I'm flawed, and, you know, I'm going to continue to make mistakes because I'm human, but who cares? You know, that's okay. That's my right as a person. What's changing is I'm going to, at the end of the day, love myself no matter what and be okay with all my flaws, because that's what makes me who I am, right? So.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. I'm always surprised when I get on. It's just, you know, I call in to hear the radio, to hear the topic at hand, and it's always been interesting.
Well, good. I'm glad it's interesting, and, you know, you've obviously become – part of the listener crowd, and it's great when you are able to get on and let us know how things are going with you. We always like hearing from you, Mai.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're an official funhauser. That's what we call our listeners.
I am an official funhauser. It's so fun. It is really, you know, yeah, didn't know what to expect. And my other question is, when are you coming to California?
When? Well, I'll probably come back at the beginning of the year. I like to come down when I've gotten enough of the Northwest weather up here to get some Southern California sunshine. So probably February-ish, something like that. But I'll let everybody know when I'm going to be in the area and doing readings with clients.
I definitely want to have a schedule a massage time or something. Are you still doing those or no?
Oh, you looked on my website. No, I'm not doing body work anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Definitely an herb then for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll continue the conversation. You're always welcome to connect with me too off air. I've got contact information if you have questions about other stuff.
Okay.
So.
You got
all
it.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Bye.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye. All right, lovely show tonight, even without our constant companion, Mr. Michael J. So he will be back next week, as promised. So, but let's finish up with one more herb, just to keep the energy going. Let's talk about another nightshade family, Solanaceae family, a little bit. This one has the common name of belladonna, which basically means beautiful lady, right? And its Latin name is Atropa belladonna. And unlike tobacco, this is an old world native. It likes to grow in European area, in England, Mediterranean. And it's also called... deadly nightshade. So that gives you a little insight into how powerful of a plant it was seen as by people that work with it back in the day. So belladonna means beautiful lady. And at one time, particularly in, I believe it was around the Renaissance time, it was seen as attractive if you had really large pupils, right? So if your pupils really dilated and they took up most of your space there next to your iris. Well, when you make a juice of the berries and put that into your eyes, it makes your eyes dilate because of the medicinal effects of belladonna. Preparations of it are still used actually in different kinds of eye treatments. So it also has some other effects. Works on the nervous system to stop spasms. Has been used as a diaphoretic and a diuretic, so it moves moisture. There's a homeopathic preparation of belladonna that's used, so you don't have to worry about the toxic aspects because too much of it can be poisonous. Children have been poisoned by eating the berries. One of the names for it is devil's cherries because they look a little bit like cherries do, I guess, if you weren't paying attention. But they're sweet tasting, but not not without a bitter edge. But it's definitely not a plant to introduce to children or to have grandchildren. And again, like most of these plants, not good for pregnancy. But homeopathic preparation is used for different kinds of pains and nervous system complaints. Here's the thing that I think is spiritually interesting about this plant, one of them. So you may have heard of the Greek fates, right, who were responsible for determining one's lifespan, right? So, which is the genus name for a lot of spiders, is the one who's sp- spun the thread of your life in Greek myth, right? So she spilled out the life. And then Lachesis, which is another name for venom, would measure the thread, right? So Arachne spins it out, Lachesis measures the thread, and then Atropa was the Greek, was one of the three Greek fates who determined the length. And so she's the one who held these shears and would use them to cut your lifespan, right? So you got the spinner, the measurer, and then Atropa's the one that cuts you off. So in shamanic use and other spiritual traditions, the spirit of Belladonna is used for cutting spiritual connections to people, right? So akala lines. And this is very timely with the last caller we were talking about, who's recalibrating her connections to a person and really herself, right? I've used a flower essence of Belladonna that I grew in working with people who are trying to cut negative spiritual connections. So they feel like there's, you know, forces that are not wanted in their life. And so it's a way to really establish very definite boundaries, right? You can think of Belladonna as a boundary plant in that regard, but really powerful plant. So, yeah, another herb to know on Halloween. All right, so we talked about mugwort, we talked about tobacco, we talked about you, and we got to talk about Belladonna. All sorts of interesting herbs that are out there, and ones you can get to know more by studying on your own. And as with everything, any herbal information I hand out, it's just that. It's information for entertainment purposes only. If you have any health issues or medicinal questions, you should definitely consult your trusted practitioner, licensed professional. All right. We've had a wonderful time tonight, and I look forward to meeting up with you again next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, 6 p.m. here on Friday. So I'd like to thank all the wonderful callers we got to tonight. And if we didn't get to you, please try us again next week. Make sure that you follow us on your favorite podcast platform, Spotify, Amazon, Apple. We're available. Take with us. We are available to take with you. We have over 2 years of archived shows for you to listen to and naturally take us with you. If you're interested in contacting us for event booking or readings or personal healings outside of the show, again, my name is Lauren Berg, a shamanic practitioner, psychic certified clinical herbalist. You can call or text at 401-344-7534. Email me at givingtree@earth.net. And my website is givingtreefarm.com. On behalf of everybody here at the Psychic Funhouse, thank you again for tuning in. Have a lovely rest of your week, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye now.